I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of.
Our guests today are three of them. We've got Heath Mann, we've got Abby Kiefner, and we've got Emma Morton from the Sagebrush Steppe Land Trust. Peter, we're talking about land in the West.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme for us because it's so important. And there are multiple types of land trusts and they do different things. And I think this is another great conversation on how land trusts do operate.
Well, we'll dig into that and many more things. First, you've got nature in the news.
Yeah, Leif, have you ever been in a cocktail party nightmare?
Many times.
Yeah, I'm sure. You look the type. All scruffy and such.
I'm usually causing the nightmare.
Okay,
for others,
gotcha. Sorry. Well, we're actually going to be talking about bats and their cocktail party nightmares.
Go on.
And what this is every night you'll have thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of bats leaving their roosts at once.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And bats use echolocation to find their way. And when you have hundreds of thousands of bats leaving a roost at once, you would think that they would get confused, run into each other, run into a tree, run into, you know, a cave wall,
etc. I would think that if I had ever thought about this question before.
Right. Yeah. This is why I'm here.
Okay, good.
So in the past, researchers have looked at how individual bats do their echolocation in a small group. And what they found is that individual bats will change their frequency slightly lower or slightly higher. So you'll have, you know, say you got 20 bats and they're each chirping at a slightly different frequency. And that works. But when you have hundreds of thousands of bats, not so much. And so they were looking at these bats and using a combination of high resolution tracking, ultrasonic recording, and sensory motor computer modeling as these bats were leaving. And you know what they found?
What did they find out?
That bats are actually using echolocation on the bat in front of them. They're not worried about the bats around them.
Okay.
They're worried about the bat in front of them. And so they're bouncing their echolocation off of the bat in front of them. And they're following that bat. And they're not, as long as they don't run into the behind of the bat ahead of them, they're cool. And they ignore everyone around them. So all these bats are echolocating on the
bat.
So
it's all relative.
It's all relative.
It's intervals.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is how a lot of our hearing works, right?
Right.
That's how you can sing in different keys because you're recognizing intervals, not actual pitch.
Yeah. But they're also reducing all the white noise around them from all the other bats doing their chirping. They're just following that one bat ahead of them.
So if the lead bat runs into the wall,
everyone's in trouble.
Oh, boy. That's cool.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of techniques that you had, like computer modeling in there, and you had, what is a sensor? Well, I'm reading it on your.
Yeah, sensory motor, computer modeling.
So I'm trying to imagine all of these scientists, like, in the mouth of a cave with all the gear and bats flying over them.
Right. And I'm just thinking of the cameras that they're using. They have to be high def.
Sounds like fun research for somebody to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, today we are going to talk land. Trivia question for today is, what year was legislation passed declaring Earth Day? Some of you are old enough to know this.
Barely.
All right. A few of us. Okay. When we come back, Sagebrush Steppe Land Trust will join us. Gotta stay tuned.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
And we're back from the break. Our guests today, we have three folks in the room with us. First off, we've got Heath Mann. We've got Abby Kiefner. We've got Emma Morton. They're all from the Sagebrush Steppe Land Trust. So first off, welcome to The Nature of Idaho. We've got so many of you. Let's go in turn, introduce yourselves. Heath, you start us off.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, and happy Earth Day, everybody. I'm Heath Mann with Sagebrush Steppe Land Trust, their executive director, and we're excited to be here.
I'm Abby Kiefner. I am one of the newest members of the family at SSLT, and I am the new office administrator.
Hi, I'm Emma Morton. I'm the incoming development coordinator for Sagebrush, and I'm really excited to be joining the team here in May to start doing some good work with them.
Fantastic. Okay, so the Sagebrush Step Land Trust, you are a land trust. Tell us what the overall mission of your organization is.
So our mission is to protect, connect, and enhance wildlife habitat, working lands, and community spaces here in Southeast Idaho.
What does that entail?
Well, in essence, what we are trying to do is to ensure that the lands we see today are the lands we see tomorrow. And to accomplish that, it might mean working to restore lands that are poignant in our memories, working with landowners to ensure the success of their operations, help ensure food security, and an Idaho way of life. It also means working with conservationists, ecologists, and biologists to ensure the health and biodiversity of Southeast Idaho.
So there are all sorts of kinds of lands and landowners, right? There's federal public lands, there's state lands, there's private lands. Are you working with all of these stakeholders, different owners?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting thought process as you work through that. We really do work with landowners. We work with ranchers, row crop farmers, as well as landowners that just have a part of Idaho's history. And we really look for areas that can provide bridges for migration corridors. And so we're looking to abut as much public land as possible.
Right. So it's making connections between this sort of checkerboard pattern of land ownerships and land types and land uses throughout our countryside, making sure there's conduits so that wildlife can get from point A to point B.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just to state our goal, it's we're here to improve or maintain Southeast Idaho to the natural environment, the environment we remember as children. Can you, Leif, describe for me what you love most about Idaho and how you came to love Idaho?
Well, so I'm not from here originally, but I've lived in Idaho now for almost 20 years, and it checks so many boxes for me of what I like in a region to live in, which is I have a place in city where I get to work and do my thing, but within 15, 20 minutes, I am off the grid effectively, and I'm in nature. And in all directions, I can do that. And for me personally, that's a really valuable thing to be able to do. I love our landscape. I love the variability of our landscape. I can see nature. I can see wildlife. And I can be a part of it with very, very low degrees of effort and cost. It's right there. And I love that very much.
Yeah, that there is exactly what we're trying to make sure lasts in perpetuity or forever, so that the young people that are born into Idaho or new people that move here have the opportunity to enjoy the Idaho we remember. And that means different things for different people. You know, we have so many different groups. It could be that you have a family farm that you want to maintain your lifestyle, or a ranch. It also could mean maintaining or restoring riparian habitats, so your rivers and streams and creeks, which are the homes to our world-class fisheries, or actually maintaining or helping to ensure our high desert steppe ecosystem exists throughout eternity, which is home to our mule deer, sage grouse, moose, elk, as well as the unique rubber boa.
So can you guys tell us a little bit about the Sagebrush Step? You know, I sit, you know, I've been here for 10 years, and there's sometimes there are people like, it's the Sagebrush Step. It's kind of boring. There's nothing there. I grew up in Iowa, and I've heard people complain about, you know, Iowa, even there's no prairies left, really. You know, a 5-acre section really doesn't count as a prairie. But people would go, it's just flat, and there's
flat.
Nothing to
you
see.
You know what I've heard? I've heard the worst I've ever heard, and this is a landscape I love, the Sagebrush Steppe. Mm-hmm. I'll hear, it's a wasteland. It's a wasteland. There's nothing to be had out there. It's dry desert. no one does anything out there. And I'm like, are you crazy?
They're absolutely incorrect, right? Just you guys all work for the Sagebrush Landstep. So what brought you there and what inspires you when you're out in that sagebrush?
Well, I'm happy to take the conversation about what the Sagebrush step is, but I would also like to hear Abby and Emma describe what their hopes and dreams are for Sagebrush Step Land Trust moving forward. To me, I by the way, heath means barren wasteland. I always think that's barren wasteland of knowledge. So I guess I was brought to this ecosystem simply because barren wasteland. But I think when you really dig in and look into the Sagebrush Step ecosystem, it's very, very unique. And it's really unique to our area. And that's fascinating to me. And, you know, walking through the Sagebrush Step or riding a bike or a horse or whatever other type of recreation, which are also things we want to protect, is that public access to these lands. And we have some of those that we'll go through in examples of later. But the sago lilies and the Indian paintbrush and the penstemon and all the flowers that we see out there, and then the different grasses that are unique to each individual area, and then the habitat for all of our creepy crawly things and flying birds that each sagebrush can allow to happen and stuff. So that biodiversity and the uniqueness of it is really what brought me here, and I think is what translates to people who are so passionate about preserving this ecosystem.
And well, Heath, you totally took my answer. but honestly, so many things that Leaf just said.
Is this Abby or Emma?
Oh, this is Abby. Abby here. But I was attracted to it as well. I came here many, 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 many years ago to go to college, and I fell in love with the nature just surrounding. Like Leaf said, you know, you can be in the town, in the city, working, taking a meeting, and then within 10, 15 minutes, you're in the middle of nowhere. And I love that. I get to take my dogs. I have two crazy dogs that I'm crazy about. And just adventuring out in the hills, you know, that perfect quiet. That's, I think, a lot of people in this area find their spirituality out in the mountains and the hills. And that is a place that, you know, I want to help protect. That's one reason why I, you know, applied for this job. It was looking around and seeing everything that I love, my friends love, family loves, and I wanted to see it continue. I think that's so important right now. So.
And this is Emma. My background is in community and economic development, and I'm really excited to bring that lens to the Sagebrush Step Land Trust, because I think having worked in this area, in the region, for a while now, the communities in our region really love the character of our region and of the communities they live in. It's a lot of the times you hear that rural character. But also our regional economy is largely based around outdoor recreation and food production. And these are all things that make our character as a regional community. And just doing the work to help maintain that in perpetuity, working with landowners to make sure that the work that they have done their entire lives or their family have done for generations is something that we can maintain in a way that's impactful and effective for years to come. So
let's talk easements. And this is how we're going to keep the Sagebrush lands, the Sagebrush Step. For our listeners, can you kind of describe what a conservation easement is and how you go about the process of placing a section of property into a conservation easement?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that one. This is Heath. And what I would say to you is, in a nutshell, a conservation easement is a real estate transaction. If you are a landowner and you want your land to remain the way it currently is in perpetuity, then you could reach out to us or another land trust and start to explore what that easement process is. What that easement process is, broken down in a nutshell, is we will come out, or we'll have professionals come out, look at your land and what the value of that land is, and then say, okay, what value do you lose if you bar development? And that development could be selling the land to a developer so that you can create urban expansion or housing. It could mean selling to a developer for energy production or mining. And so what we try to do is work with willing landowners who have a desire to keep the land the way it is in perpetuity. And so then we'll take the value of their property and then the value of that development, and we'll pay them for that development value. But they still keep the land and they get to have a lot of input as to what those restrictions are. And then those restrictions determine the value of the check that they'll get at the end of the easement process. And after that, it's a legal document that ensures that land stays the same. And so we have a stewardship component that comes in behind that, that we go and ensure every year that the easement is being followed correctly, so that the easement is in compliance. And that, in essence, is what an easement is. And then we solicit funds from either government agencies or private individuals or private foundations to help with those costs, like the purchase of the easement and then the ongoing stewardship requirements of that land. And so that's what we're looking to do so that we can keep that. I know it's convoluted and complicated at some point, but we have some pretty good people that can help simplify the process.
Is that a really long process from, you know, you might have a landowner who has some interest perhaps in doing this process, like from start to finish, if everything lines up, is that a relatively quick thing? And then I imagine there's always that it can get delayed.
Absolutely. In essence, on average, and our people can kick me in the shin later if I get this wrong, but we're looking at a year and a half, 2 years, and at times 3 years. It is a legal process. And
sure,
as we all know, our legal system works at breakneck speed if you're a snail. And so they do the best they can. It's a lot of ensuring that the correct I's are dotted and the correct T's are crossed. And that takes time. So it
sure
is a long process. And then, you know, some of our hurdles and bottlenecks are simply, do we have the staffing? We have so many willing landowners. And it's really a great tool to help succession planning. So how do I hand off my land to my children or, you know, my family?
And the amount of effort and time that goes into it at this stage for something that results in a perpetual, long-lasting decision is a relatively small investment, if you think of it in those terms.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you cannot sweat the details enough, because you really, one of the things that we really, really work hard at doing is ensuring that if Peter decides to put his land in an easement, that Peter's desires are met, not ours. And
right,
so part of that is in that planning, in that short period of time when you're looking at it in perpetuity, then the more planning and correct information we gather from our landowners and our funding partners, the more strength that easement has.
And I'm kind of thinking too, at the beginning we were talking about wildlife corridors, and we've got all kinds of different landowners. And when you say Southeast Idaho, you guys are literally all of Southeast Idaho. And as you're looking at your easements and you're going through and trying to form these corridors, there's going to be gaps. How do you approach landowners who are in between two sections of, you know, two easements that might not have ever even considered putting a section of their land into a conservation easement. So you're starting to connect these corridors. It's great to have small pieces, but you still need, these are wildlife interstates and we need these connected.
Yeah, I'll start that and then turn it over a little to Emma and she can think about some of her strategies moving forward and how to engage that. But we really are uniquely positioned. First of all, great shows like yours help us get our message out there, and that helps. But just like any other business, word of mouth and reputation, which are cornerstones to getting your message out there and then your identity, the team that has run Sagebrush Step before us has done a great job putting us in that position. And then our stewardship coordinator, Eric Pankow, and our conservation team, which is Matt Coombs and Matt Martins, have really done a good job at engaging those landowners on their level and meeting with them. And through them, you know, we really foster don't leave here until you get another connection mentality, so that we can create this network of individuals and strength. And then the last part of that before I turn it to Emma is we want to really work hard at ensuring that we're doing the work that is expected from the landowner. It's not always going to be perfect, but the more detail-oriented we get and the more we can stay true to the desires of the landowner, the more likely we're to get the next landowner.
I think to piggyback off of that, you know, these things do take time, 1 to 3 years. And in that time, these teams are building a relationship with those landowners. These aren't purely transactional relationships. This is a transformational relationship where hopefully we will be able to work with those landowners to get to know their neighbors and start building those relationships strong enough where we're able to create that network further down the road.
Are you involved in community outreach and that sort of thing?
Actually, now that you bring it up, this Saturday is actually the environmental fair over at Lookout Point. I believe it runs most of the day, and so that's a great chance to meet people in our company, meet the other employees, see what, if you need more information, if you were still a little bit confused about what an easement is, what a land trust is, it's a great resource to sit and just have a conversation with us. Also, we are pretty active on social media. We have an Instagram account, Facebook. We also host a couple of different hikes every year. We have a spring hike and a fall hike. It's a great chance to kind of learn more about the area that you live in and that you love.
Do you go to different places? Where do you go?
This will be my first year, so I've never actually been on one. So
you've never been on a hike?
First timer, right? First here.
Yes.
Looking forward to it. It's been a long time in the making. But we organize those hikes for the community to come and join on. And we also have a great program. I don't know if you've heard of it, called Habitat Haven. You can go on our website, actually. You can donate. It's just around $20 to become a member. And it's a great way to learn about the different pollinators in our area, the wildlife, and the plants.
And you get a little yellow sign.
You do. You get a cute little yellow sign to put in your yard.
Indeed,
so you can
you
be boastful to your neighbors about what a cool club you've joined.
Or you can look down upon them for not doing the same thing
that
as
too.
You.
You know, it just goes back to building that network.
Yeah. Right, totally.
We really
those really
want,
good relationships.
We really want to foster a positive image,
all right,
Peter.
Sorry.
But
sorry.
I appreciate that. We also have some fee titles. Properties, which means we own them outright. One of our local ones is Century Heights, and that's open to the public. Usually it'll be posted if it's closed and mainly just due to winter. We kind of don't want to be in there during the winter season simply because it is a winter habitat for our mule deer population. And then the next thing I would say about it, though, it is open now. It's the old Katsalamides-type trails for those Pocatelloans that recognize that. And then we have some really cool stuff that's beginning to happen at another property that we have, which is Cackley Ranch. And out there we have some possibilities for activities, including we're going to have study plots that we're working in conjunction with Idaho State University. Also, we're developing a internship program with Idaho State University and some of our members that have a passion for that. And then, you know, we're also going to work at doing some other outreach, and I'll turn it back over to Emma to kind of talk through that a little bit. But we are going to have bird walks at Century Height, and you just have to stay posted to our website to ensure that you know when those things pop up.
We have a pretty small staff. We have a ton of volunteers who commit a lot of time to help Sagebrush Step be successful. And a lot of that is included in outreach. You'll see a lot of volunteers working in those different opportunities. A couple of different opportunities we'll have coming up this summer would be the Friday Art Walks. You'll see us pretty often. And Revive at 5, we'll have a booth. So we have a lot of different ways people can come and chat with us and just learn about conservation easements, volunteering their time, and just the different things we've got going on.
So before we move to our trivia question, we want to talk a little bit about the challenges that the Sagebrush Step Land Trust and land trusts in general are facing. And it really comes down to funding, because you're purchasing certain aspects of this land from landowners. And we can't necessarily rely on federal funding a whole lot.
Yeah, this is Emma. We're in an evolving funding landscape, I think a lot of us could say, especially in the nonprofit world. So we're working on diversifying those funding streams. You know, that's going to be building relationships and engaging with different types of corporate and private donors, really building more relationships and more in-depth relationships with private donors. And so you'll see those opportunities as well at a lot of those community outreach events. We'll be taking donations, recurring or one-time donations from people we interact with. But also doing things like this, talking with you guys about the different ways that we could reach out to philanthropic donors, corporate donors, and just figuring out ways to engage them and see the appeal in land trust and in conservation specifically. You know, like I said earlier, these land trusts help maintain not only the rural character of Southeast Idaho, but really help contribute to our economy. And there's a lot of pluses to being a large donor or a contributor to a land trust like this.
That's excellent. And we do thank you for the work that you're doing. I know Peter and I both really love the outdoors, and we want to see it, you know, here for our kids and so on. So we had a trivia question. I'm going to bring up the trivia question. I'm going to have maybe Heath answer it for me. So, what year was legislation passed declaring Earth Day?
So, it was born in Peter's birth year of 1970. I do have one quote that I would like to let you all know about for this topic, and it was quoted by Senator Gaylord Nelson out of Colorado, who was one of the authors of the bill. And that was, the quote is, and I quote, "The objective is an environment of decency, quality, and mutual respect for all other human beings and all other living creatures," which I think is a prominent way of pushing forward the message of Earth Day and the mission that it was designed to create here on Earth Day when we're taping, not when the show is airing.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Heath, Abby, and Emma, for joining us today. And you're right, we did tape on Earth Day. It was a great episode. And for all who are interested about the Sagebrush Step Land Trust, what they do and the programs they offer, please go to their website, which is sagebrushlandtrust.org, and absolutely follow them on Facebook and Instagram as well. So again, thank you guys
very
much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. And can we have you guys also make sure you check out Idaho Gives website as well, because you can see other land trusts that you might be interested in giving to.
Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Ben Graham. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.